The team huddled, but the game plan went all wrong. Now on the offensive after a huge fumble tackled by the opposition. And I'm not talking about today's Grey Cup, but the political backroom deal in the Prime Minister's office. Let's kick off this Sunday's question period.
The RCMP revealed this morning that the Prime Minister's office was guilty of corruption,
bribery, fraud, and breach of trust. Accusations against the Prime Minister's former Chief of Staff, Nigel Wright, and Mike Duffy by the RCMP. New court documents reveal a damaging trail of emails implicating a cast of key players from the Prime Minister's office and the Conservative Party. Senior senators charged with whitewashing an audit.
My conscience is clear.
Did he or didn't he know about the Duffy deal?
Mr. Speaker, it is in black and white that I did not know. The RCMP confirms it.
A key player in the Prime Minister's tight inner circle, Director of Communications Jason McDonald, will join us. Opposition leader Tom Mulcair has been leading the attack in the Commons.
He keeps avoiding the clear question.
Does he think the Prime Minister should step aside? I'll ask him. And is Stephen Harper's credibility on the line? Our political insiders on that in the scrum.
The RCMP court documents released last week gave us an intimate look at the inner workings of the Prime Minister's office through a revealing trail of emails. For more on how the PMO operates, joining me now, Harper's Director of Communications, Jason McDonald. Jason, thanks for joining us. Can you tell me, has the Prime Minister had an opportunity to read through the RCMP affidavits?
The Prime Minister is aware of what's in the documents, and I think the important points about what's in there, there's two things I would say. The first is that if you look at page 2, the RCMP makes very clear who it is they're actually investigating, who it is that they believe may have been involved in what ultimately amounts to criminal activity. That's Nigel Wright and Mike Duffy. The document also concludes and makes the point that there is nothing to suggest that the Prime Minister had any knowledge of, involvement in, or gave any direction regarding the cover-up that we now know took place.
Did the Prime Minister know that his office had asked three influential senators to sanitize a Senate report on Senator Duffy?
No, he did not.
Did the Prime Minister's office know that his office had asked Senator Irving Gerstein, the party bagman, to attempt to influence an independent audit of Duffy's expenses?
No, and had he known, he would have put a stop to that.
Then why is Senator Gerstein still the party bagman if he acted inappropriately?
Look, at the end of the day, what happened, if you look at the document here, the RCMP makes very clear, after 2,600, review of 2,600 documents, after countless interviews and discussions with people, that there are two people they're interested in here, and those are Nigel Wright and Mike Duffy.
Did the Prime Minister know his office had asked the Conservative Party to pay Duffy's invalid expenses and his legal fees? Did he know that?
Absolutely not. It was on May 15th, and the Prime Minister has said this, it was on May 15th that he found out, like everybody else, that in fact Nigel Wright had cut a check to Mr. Duffy, and that Mr. Duffy had then not told the Canadian public about the source of those funds. And the Prime Minister was in no way aware of the discussions with the Conservative Party, the Conservative Fund, or aware of the discussion between Mr. Duffy and Mr. Wright about that repayment.
So what did Nigel Wright mean in that February 22nd email when he says, I've got to go to the Prime Minister, and says, I got the gold from him?
Right. If you look at page 20 of the RCMP document, it actually tells you what happened in those discussions. Nigel Wright went to the Prime Minister and told him that Mr. Duffy was going to repay his own expenses and that he was going to admit that he had made a mistake. The issue here is that we have somebody in Mr. Duffy who has resisted that, who to this day does not believe he did anything wrong, does not believe that he should have repaid those expenses, and that the issue here was that, you know, in the Prime Minister's understanding, he was going to be compelled to pay repay his own expenses. But again, I go back to what the RCMP report itself says, that the Prime Minister had no knowledge of any of these schemes.
Well, we all know that the Prime Minister is a hands-on Prime Minister. How is it that so many people in his entourage and people who were close to them, counting 12, all knew about this, and nobody went to Stephen Harper and blew the whistle?
I think if you look at this document, it's clear that the Prime Minister wasn't always presented with the facts that we now know. If you look at that memo in one of the appendices, but clearly, had the Prime Minister known, he would have done something
to
stop it.
Would you have told him?
This isn't actually about me. I'm not the one that the RCMP is investigating.
No, but I mean, people who are his trusted advisors, mm-hmm. including his special counsel, right. his lawyer, didn't tell him?
Look, the Prime Minister himself, when he was on the radio 2 weeks back, was asked a similar question, and he basically said, I should have known, I had a right to know, and had I known, I would have put a stop
but
to it because this is
inappropriate. How can an office, the Prime Minister's office, be run like that when a potential criminal wrongdoing and a conspiracy is going on and nobody will go to the Prime Minister and tell him?
Look, again, you know, I can't speak for the actions of some of the people who are named in mm-hmm. the document by the RCMP. What I can tell you is what I know. And what we know is that Nigel Wright took responsibility for this. Mm-hmm. There were some people that he informed, and the RCMP's investigated. They've concluded that there are two people that they believe are possibly guilty of some criminal wrongdoing. They've named those people. The Prime Minister is not one of them. And in fact, the document itself lays out clearly that they do not believe that the Prime Minister had any knowledge or any involvement in this.
Why, Jason, after I broke the story on May 14th, did the Prime Minister not gather all the evidence of what went down and come out and tell the Canadian public that there had been potential criminal wrongdoing and a conspiracy run out of his office? Why are we finding this out from the RCMP?
Well, it's only now. I mean, the RCMP conducted an investigation. It's only now in November that the RCMP is saying, well, in fact, we've reviewed,
No. You had all these emails. Ray Novak, the new chief of staff, had to have come in and said, look, we've got to find out what's going on here. Don't tell me the Prime Minister's office didn't try to find out what was going on after the story broke.
Well, look, people have asked questions. The RCMP got involved. And as the Prime Minister said, we have assisted the RCMP in their investigation, provided them whatever they want. The RCMP itself
Why did the Prime Minister not tell Canadians?
Let me finish, Bob. In the document itself, the RCMP points out that the Prime Minister directed his staff to provide whatever assistance was required, to provide whatever materials are required.
We have done that, and now,
in November, the RCMP has come out and said, we've now reviewed these 2,600 documents, we've done these interviews or had these conversations with various actors in this, and what we've determined is that there are two people at the root of this who are actually suspected
of doing something. So Canadians didn't have a right to know immediately what went on.
Well, this is a question of actually finding the facts, right, Bob? And now we've got this document that actually lays out all of this information. And, you know, this is not the Prime Minister's office laying this out. This is the RCMP. And what they have said is that there are two people they believe that are at the root of this that may be guilty.
Okay, was there a cleanup operation this summer to get rid of everybody that was associated with this? We saw the people in the Prime Minister's office. They have all been moved out. Marjorie LeBreton, no longer the Senate leader, Carolyn Stewart Olson and David Dutachuk removed from key leadership roles. Was this part of a cleanup operation?
No, Bob, I mean, you know, what it sounds like you're doing now is what Mr. Mulcair and others have tried to do is just they cast aspersion, right?
I'm not casting aspersions. It's in the RCMP affidavits.
No, what's in the RCMP document is a conclusion that two people are actually suspected of criminal wrongdoing, and they name those two people.
But they also talk about people who were involved in this conspiracy and cover-up, and all of these people were involved in this.
None of these people are being investigated by the RCMP.
That we know of yet.
I can't speak for the RCMP. Mm-hmm. What we know is what's in this document, and what's in this document are the names of two people that they've identified as people that they're interested in for potential criminal activity. And we know who those two people are.
And do you think it's incumbent upon the Prime Minister finally just to come out and tell Canadians he's sorry for what happened?
Well, like I said, I mean, the Prime Minister was asked, you know, if he had any regrets about what had happened. And he gave a firm answer 2 weeks ago when he was asked this question on the radio in Toronto. And what he said was, I should have known about this. I had a right to know about this. And if I had known about it, I could have done something about it. And what I would have done is put a stop to it.
All right. Jason, thanks very much. I appreciate you coming in and taking these hard questions.
Thanks very much, Bob.
Three senior Conservative senators were implicated in the RCMP documents last week. Senators Dutachuk, Stewart Olson, and Marjorie LeBreton. We invited them all to join us here today. LeBreton replied no Tkachuk sent a letter to CTV saying the allegations against him are total nonsense, and there was no reply from Stuart Olson. But the man leading the charge in the House of Commons on the Wright-Duffy deal, opposition leader Thomas Mulcair, joins me now from Montreal. Mr. Mulcair, you've seen the RCMP affidavits that lay out a high-level conspiracy and potential criminal wrongdoing run out of Stephen Harper's office. The Prime Minister's defense seems to be the lone man theory. He didn't know anything, even though so many other people in his entourage did.
That's the defense that Stephen Harper's tried to use since June 5th, when he tried to convince Canadians that Nigel Wright was acting alone. Well, there is a question of sole responsibility here, and it's Stephen Harper's sole responsibility for what goes on in his office. This is the first time in Canadian history that there have been criminal accusations against people who are working in the Prime Minister's office while he's still in function. It's never been seen before. So his denials simply lack credibility. There were three senators who denied, and now it turns out that that wasn't the truth. That's in black and white in the report from the RCMP. So it's coming out like Chinese water torture, drop one drop at a time. But thanks to the incredible hard work of CTV and yourself, Mr. Fyfe, frankly, Canadians are now starting to get a look at what actually went on in Stephen Harper's office. This was a conspiracy. It is the object of a criminal investigation and accusations. And more importantly, we're finding out that there was a cover-up to try to make sure Canadians never found out.
Well, on that very issue, if we accept the Prime Minister's viewpoint is that there's no evidence that he wasn't involved in the actual payment of the money. We do know that after the story appeared, that he never came forward and told Canadians, hey, there was a potential criminal wrongdoing in my office, and in fact, there was a cover-up.
Exactly. And I mean, that's where it strains credulity the whole way Stephen Harper's been going at this since day one. It doesn't work. It doesn't wash. So he's tried to say, well, you know, I've had nothing to do with it on this one detail. But what the documents show is that he was aware that something was being done. At one point, Nigel Wright even says in an email, I don't want anybody doing this until I get sign-off from the Prime Minister. 1 hour later, he says, I've talked to the Prime Minister, we're good to go. So when I asked Stephen Harper, what did that mean, good to go? You know what he had the nerve to tell Canadians? Oh, I meant good to go so that Mike Duffy could pay his own expenses. Really? Since when does the Prime Minister of Canada have to approve a senator paying his own expenses? Doesn't wash.
I noticed that the official opposition party has not yet called for the Prime Minister's resignation. I know you wouldn't ask for a resignation unless you were confident that it was deserved and called for. Are you waiting for a smoking gun? Is that why you haven't done that?
We want Canadians to see what type of government we've had under the Conservatives. It's taken a while. If Stephen Harper had told the truth since day one, it would have been a lot less damaging for him. He's just taken the classic deny and delay approach. So the more things come out, the more people realize that it's true. For the first time in Canadian history, we have a Prime Minister who believes that he's the master of Parliament and not its servant. What we saw this week was alarming with regard to dictating the individual choices and the behavior within the Senate. He had the nerve to tell us a couple of weeks ago in the House, oh no, the Senate's completely independent. Now we see, black and white, what his office was doing to control the Senate. He tries to do the same thing in the House of Commons. Believe me, if he could, he could do that. He'd try that with us, but it's not working. The NDP is the first real opposition he's ever faced. He's not used to it. I'm no Stéphane Dion or Michael Ignatieff. We're standing up to him. We'd love to see Justin Trudeau there once in a while, but more often than not, he's been missing in action as well on this one.
You know, you're a lawyer, and we know from the RCMP affidavits that Conservative Party lawyer Arthur Hamilton and Harper's former special counsel Benjamin Perrin were involved in the Duffy-Wright secret deal.
Yes.
Do they not? Because they do report to the Prime Minister, wouldn't they have a legal obligation to inform the Prime Minister?
That's what doesn't work either. Because don't forget, this is Stephen Harper, control freak. This guy controls absolutely everything under him. He controls everything under him. Come on. Do you really think that you had a dozen people? That was the figure you put out a few weeks ago when we said a dozen. Stephen Harper denied that too. It turns out that there were exactly a dozen people, in these documents anyway, aware of it. Do you think all those people were beavering away on a plan that he knew the broad contours of, perhaps not this detail or that detail, and then they were working out the lines of the cover-up, and he knew nothing about it? Nobody believes that.
Well, what about the role of Senator Irving Gerstein, the Conservative Party chief's fundraiser? We know from the affidavits that he approached an independent auditing firm, Deloitte, to try to get them to basically squash the audit of Senator Duffy.
It's incredible because that was an audit being done by Deloitte for and on behalf of the Senate of Canada. And we actually found out that there was a young man at the table who said, hey, you can't let them do this. He's been thrown under the bus. I think Stephen Harper's going to have to get himself a bigger bus. But what we saw was that there was contact with Deloitte. And I hope that Deloitte is able to stand up and say that they didn't allow themselves to be influenced. But that's also quite disquieting because what they were going to do is make a deal with Mike Duffy. We'll come up with this cock and bull story that the $90,000 came out of a bank loan you got from the Royal Bank. We'll launder it through that way, and then you can put that out as a story, and then we'll go easy on you. But who was the Prime Minister's office to say that they would go easy on a sitting senator when the Senate itself was investigating? That's a really serious problem.
All right. Thanks for speaking to us, Mr. Mulcair.
Thank you very much.
We'll have more on the Duffy deal and who knew what coming up next with our members of Parliament. And of course, we'll have more on all this coming up with the Scrum later on Question Period. For more on the Duffy deal and what went on in the Prime Minister's office, I'm joined here in the studio by members of Parliament, Liberal Ralph Goodale, Paul Calandra, the Prime Minister's Parliamentary Secretary, and New Democrat Murray Rankin. First question to you, Mr. Calandra. The Prime Minister says he was in the dark about this alleged corruption and conspiracy in his office. Even though we know that there was at least a dozen other people who knew about this, why didn't the Prime Minister know?
Again, the Prime Minister mentioned in the House, and even I on a number of occasions, the Prime Minister stated that, you know, he expected more from his staff, but the documents do clearly outline that the Prime Minister did not know.
They said there's no evidence the Prime Minister knew.
But also, it also said...
Were these people lying to the Prime Minister?
But also, in fairness, Robert said that the Prime Minister, as soon as he did find out on the 15th when you broke the story, that he immediately went back to his office and told his staff to make sure that they would cooperate.
Did Nigel Wright lie to him and the other people in his office?
Well, look, at this point, that's what Nigel Wright himself has said, that he did not bring the Prime Minister into his confidence with respect to him paying his using his own resources to repay Senator Duffy's inappropriate expenses.
Okay, we're going to look at some evidence from the RCMP affidavits. On February 22nd, hours before Mike Duffy went on TV and a script approved by the Prime Minister's office to say he'd repaid the money, Nigel Wright wrote, "I do want to speak to the PM before everything is considered final." Less than an hour later, Wright followed up with another email, "We are good to go," from the PM. Now, Mr. Goodell, this was in reference to point three of the Duffy-Wright deal, in which, it's an important point here, because in which that deal says there will be an arrangement to keep him whole on the repayment. His legal fees will also be reimbursed. What do you make of that?
Well, it begs a lot of questions. The Prime Minister maintains that he doesn't know anything about any of this right from day one. But here you have evidence from the RCMP saying there was a conversation, according to the police, between Nigel Wright and the Prime Minister. It had to do, according to the police, with an arrangement to keep Mike Duffy whole, was the language they used. Mr. Wright saying, "I want to talk to the Prime Minister," and coming back a short time later and saying, "We're good to go," from the PM. We need to know from the Prime Minister, and perhaps even only from the police investigation, what does "good to go" actually refer to? It seems on the surface to be saying we're good to go with the Conservative Party paying off Mike Duffy's debts. We need to know the
again,
facts.
As the Prime Minister said in the House a couple days ago, and as it was repeated by the Prime Minister's office a few days ago as well, the Prime Minister did not know about any arrangement to have the Conservative Party repay those funds. We were told by Senator Duffy that he was going to be repaying the expenses using his own resources, and that was what was going to be happening. Clearly, that obviously has not happened. We've learned a heck of a lot more happened than that, and then it was Nigel Wright who did that. Okay. So.
But why would you need to be good to go to ask that if a person is a senator like Mr. Duffy and he was going to pay back his own expenses, why would the Prime Minister have to weigh in and give permission for that? What on earth does that mean? How can that be make any sense to Canadians?
Well, I want to go to another piece of evidence that shows how the Senate process was subverted. On May 8th, the day before, major changes were made to the Duffy report, which watered it down. Mm. PMO staffer Patrick Rogers emails Wright saying, "I just met with Senator Carolyn Stewart Olson, one of Mr. Harper's most trusted aides. I gave her our changes. She agrees with them 100%. Mr. Rankin, that is clear interference from the Prime Minister's office in an independent in a parliament, which is independent.
Absolutely. And, you know, the Senate is supposed to be this place of sober second thought, they tell us, where it's a Prime Minister that's office that is orchestrating a cover-up. It's unbelievable. And then we understand one of the senators, Mr. Gerstein, apparently the chief bagman by his own description of the Conservative Party, is out there trying to call people at Deloitte's and see if they can go easy on Senator Duffy. This is unbelievable. Really, Canadians step back from this and ask themselves, this is going on in the highest office of the land, in the Prime Minister's office. It's really, frankly, dismaying.
Mr. Goodale, we heard the Prime Minister say a couple of weeks ago that the Senate is independent.
Well, I guess that's the fiction that he would like to maintain in these circumstances. But clearly, on the evidence that the police are bringing forward, there is a long pattern of interference with respect to the audit process and with respect to the report that the Senate wrote about the audit process. And I think we have to remember why these documents are now in the public domain. The police are bringing forward their argument before a court to get more authority, to get more evidence. They want to go after the computers and the servers of these particular senators to get more detail of what conversations were going on back and forth between the senators and the Prime Minister's office to verify what on the surface in the allegations appears to be interference in an audit and interference in a parliamentary process, both of which are wrong.
To get more evidence. That's what this is for. It's an information to obtain more evidence because they believe, as you know, they believe they have possible bribery, fraud, breach of trust, and they want to get more evidence to go further into it. And when you have people allegedly deleting emails, a government that claims to be four square behind accountability, that's shocking.
Now, on May 14th, the day I learned about and reported on the secret Duffy Wright deal, when I made the phone calls at the Prime Minister's office, Nigel Wright wrote this email. He says, "The PM knows in broad terms only that I personally assisted Duffy when I was getting him to agree to repay the expenses." Mr. Calandra, what in broad terms did he know that?
Again, what the Prime Minister has said on a number of occasions, that Senator Duffy was going to use his own resources to repay those expenses.
No. He said, "I personally assisted Duffy."
Again, that Senator Duffy was going to repay those expenses on his own. On February 13th.
But he said, "I personally assisted him."
On February the 13th, the Prime Minister was approached by Senator Duffy, we all know that, to justify those inappropriate expenses. The Prime Minister told him, in the presence of Nigel Wright, to repay those expenses. Nigel Wright has also said in the exact same documents that you're referring to, that he did not bring the Prime Minister into his confidence with respect to the fact that he was personally repaying those expenses. When you talk about what these two gentlemen just said with respect to the independence of the Senate, we know that the Liberal leader was trying to whip his senators into voting against removing these senators from...
We're talking about subverting a Senate report, watering it down to lie to the public. That's a big difference.
Well, you bet it is.
It's huge.
Am I allowed to finish my comment? If that would be okay with everybody at the table, I would appreciate it. This is the first time learning that the Liberals and the NDP do not take advice from other people with respect to reports. I sit in committee twice a week, and when we're reviewing committee reports, I have political staff that is behind me. They provide me with advice constantly. When we go in camera, political staff is allowed to remain in camera while we're doing that. I look across, and I always see political staff from both of these two parties sitting there. But ultimately,
I'm the one who makes that decision. Ultimately, those who are elevated to the Senate in making these reports, they make those decisions. They have to stand by the decisions that they make the way I do.
Mr. Goodell.
Well, in the information that the police have produced, it is this latter point that Paul is referring to that is being contradicted, that there isn't that independence of decision-making, that in fact the senators weren't sitting there deciding, oh, in my own good judgment, this is what I should do. In fact, their strings were being pulled from across the street in the Landschmidt building.
Are you saying you don't bring political staff into when you're reviewing the reports?
Ralph, this is
revelation to me.
You don't have the decision-making authority of the senator or the MP.
Exactly. You make it
usurped and contradicted by the PMO, and that's what the police documents are alleging.
What are the people in the Prime Minister's office supposed to be doing here with an independent supposed investigation of the Senate? Just what were they doing? Providing political advice? No, they were going more than that, the evidence appears to show. They were going to try to subvert this process. That's what the people of Canada want to know more about.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. I'm sure we'll all be keeping on this story to find out all the sort of details and hopefully the truth at the end of the day.
It's just beginning.
The truth.
Well, there's 4 by-elections tomorrow, 2 in Manitoba, 1 in Montreal, and 1 in Toronto. Will they set the stage for the 2015 election? We'll check in with reporters from each region up next on Question Period. Canadian voters will be testing the 2015 election waters tomorrow with 4 by-elections, 2 in Manitoba, 1 in Montreal, and 1 in Toronto. To get the lay of the land, joining me from Winnipeg, Winnipeg Free Press journalist Dan Lett, from Toronto, News Talk 1010's John Moore, and from Montreal, political oracle himself, Jean Lapierre. First question to you, Dan. The Prime Minister was in Winnipeg on Friday. He also sent in his chief political strategist Jenny Byrne into Brandon Souris. Are the Liberals really going to win this race?
Well, it's hard to say. Right now, we've had some polling that shows that the Liberals may actually be slightly ahead in Brandon Souris. Brandon's Manitoba's second largest city. The problem, of course, is that voter turnout in by-elections is notoriously low. So it's really hard to tell whether enough Liberals will show up to overcome what is a pretty predictable, rock-solid Conservative base.
Well, we've seen the Tories run attack ads against the Liberal candidate, saying he just moved back to run. And we also see the Liberals, Justin Trudeau on Friday, releasing a letter basically trying to capitalize on the Senate scandal hitting Harper on that. Is that enough to turn things around?
Well, you know, Brandon is an unusual place. I mean, it runs the provincial Conservatives and the NDP really share the seats in this city in provincial politics. It certainly can be done. The Liberals are showing all signs that they believe it can be done. The Conservatives on the other side are running the same Conservative campaign. They have a former provincial cabinet minister in MLA, Larry McGuire, running for them. They've kept him out of the limelight. They've kept him away from the media. He hasn't attended debates. It's pretty much Tory electioneering 101. If they're worried, they're not showing it. The Liberals, on the other hand, Justin Trudeau has been to the riding twice. He's been in Manitoba a lot, actually, even visiting the other riding, Provencher. They're taking the poll results as an indication that there may be a seat to steal, and it would be a significant expression of Conservative dissatisfaction in rural Manitoba if they were to win this seat.
Now, John, the Tories aren't players in the Toronto riding of Rosedale. It's really a race between the NDP and the Liberal star candidate, Krista Freeland. What's your sense? Are the Liberals going to be able to hold on to this riding? Because Linda McQuaig seems to be giving them a run for their money.
Oh, she does, absolutely. And I think it could be a lot closer than certainly the Liberals or a lot of observers think. You have to bear in mind, this riding was Conservative back in the old days of progressive Conservatives. But you're right, the Conservatives fired their candidate in the last election cycle because he said too many nice things about the gays and the homeless and people like that, because it's an urban riding. But if you look at this riding, it has run the Liberals 3-1 margins over the NDP in a couple of election cycles, but in the last election, it was actually 40% to 30%. And you're right, Chrystia Freeland, I think a lot of people see her as a bit of a Michael Ignatieff candidate. She's very smart. She's very internationally known. She does TED Talks, and she's Justin's choice. But Linda McQuaig really seems to have the retail aspect of this down. And I think that there's the possibility either it's going to be very close or the NDP could steal it.
Jean, the riding of Bourassa was held by Denis Coderre, who's now the mayor of Montreal. This is really a race again between the Liberals and the NDP. Do the NDP have a chance of winning this riding? I know Thomas Mulcair spent a lot of time there.
Yeah, well, I guess we're getting a preview of what the next election is going to be in Quebec. In most ridings, it's going to be between the Liberals and the NDP. But I must say that in this case, frankly, the Liberals, it's for them to lose, because that riding has held on even in the Ignatieff years. And so Denis Coderre has won it last time by over 3,000 majority. And so, frankly, I can't see the NDP winning it. But on the other hand, they've been very, very aggressive. Mr. Mulcair has been doing the subways and what have you. And they're hoping that their candidate, Stephen Murray, who's very well known in the Asian community, is going to make it. But it's a very, very long way before the NDP can make it. It would take a surprise, but again, voter turnout is going to be so low here because we're just out of a municipal election. We're also into provincial by-elections, so people are all mixed up. So I don't see much of a turnout, but I can't see the Liberals losing it this time.
John, I want to ask you, the Tories made big inroads into Toronto in the 2011 election. If the Liberals win three of these by-elections, the Tories will probably win Provencher. What do you think the implications are for the Toronto area?
I don't think it changes the balance very much. It certainly doesn't change it with the Tories. I mean, the Tories have been eating around Toronto, and sometimes they win within Toronto if they have a particularly strong candidate. But, you know, you have to look in the old city of Toronto, for example. If you look at municipal, provincial, and federal elections, this city votes about 75% left. So it's really to be carved up between the NDP and the Liberals.
Okay, Jean, give me your summation of what this means. If we all expect that the Liberals win three, what does that mean for the Prime Minister?
I don't think it means much because, like for example, Bourassa is not representative of the province. I mean, if we had an election in Sherbrooke or in Trois-Rivières, we could say there's a trend. But those ones don't mean much except for the one in Manitoba. For the other ones, I don't see any meaningful message for the Prime Minister, because in most of those ridings he's not even a player. I mean, in Bourassa, I guess he'll probably make something like 10% of the vote, and so I wouldn't see many lessons there.
Okay, gentlemen, thanks very much. Much appreciated.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
The $90,000 Duffy deal, allegations of fraud and bribery at the highest levels of the Harper government. That and more coming up next on The Scrum. Welcome to The Scrum. With me, Tawny McCharles from the Toronto Star, the National Post, John Iveson, Gloria Galloway from the Globe and Mail, and my good friend, Mr. Oliver. John, I'm hearing from a lot of conservatives that this Senate scandal has spooked them. And I want to read a quote from one MP who said privately, "This is not what we signed up for, sitting there and clapping, pretending everything is great." I hear you're picking up the same kind of stuff.
Yeah, I was quite surprised and shocked. I mean, I spoke to maybe 8 Conservative MPs on Friday. The sense was, well, I'll tell you the most extreme comments I got were that if there are charges laid against Nigel Wright, then Harper can't continue. They're already talking openly about Jim Flaherty becoming the interim leader and a leadership contest before the next election. Now, I wouldn't say that is broadly representative of all the people I talked to. I think I think the sentiment really is that they still stand behind Harper, they still believe him. I think they genuinely do believe the fact that this guy's a straight arrow, that he would not have knowingly paid back Duffy's expenses because he would have disagreed with that in principle. So I think he still has the confidence of the majority of his caucus, but if he loses that confidence, the caucus will ask him to resign. I mean, if they think he's a liability electorally, and I guess we'll see that in this by-election on Monday, particularly the one in Manitoba, and they may jettison him.
I had a prominent conservative give me a stunning line about this, and I don't know whether he realized quite what he was saying. when he said that the Senate scandal had become, quote unquote, a cancer on the body of the Conservative Party. Now that sort of has echoes of the famous cancer on the presidency speech to Richard Nixon. And I didn't ask this person whether or not that's what he was referring to, but this was the Law and Order Party. And their commitment to that, to what the Prime Minister promised, and we have to keep reminding people about what politicians promise, to be the most ethical government in Canadian history, it's all in tatters.
Well, look, we have a serious problem. The Prime Minister has one. The Conservative Party has one. The RCMP are alleging a criminal conspiracy run out of his office. I don't know how long he can hang on as Prime Minister if their charges are actually laid, because he can't say, I didn't know anything. It happened under his watch. He may not have known it, but it happened under his watch.
There is a principle of ministerial responsibility where you do have to take responsibility for what happens in your office, whether you knew about it or not. And the documents that were released this week do suggest that even if he didn't know about the $90,000 payment that Mr. Wright made to Mr. Duffy, that he certainly had cause or opportunity to know about some of the goings-on that preceded that. And perhaps his profession that he did not know anything about it, it's more easy for the opposition to try to poke holes in that. That being said, we've seen the Prime Minister go through a number of scandals before, not this serious at all, and we're not talking about them anymore, and we've got a year and a half before an election. So we'll see whether or not the criminal charges, and this resonates for months and months and months to come, which it could well do, but I think that is still up in the air.
I think the problem for the Prime Minister is not only are we still talking about this, but we're not talking about all the other things he wants to talk about. And I think that there is a drip-drip effect. It's a corrosive scandal for his government because it's constantly reminding people of just what Craig said, the initial pledges, but also it's going against their perception of the micromanager who knew nothing. But, you know, all of this, you know, John just prefaced his comments he heard from the Conservative MPs on does Nigel Wright get charged. I'm not sure yet that, based on what we've read, that even they've made out a criminal offense against Nigel Wright. Yeah, about that.
I read the charges this morning, and you read in the light of all the documents, and then you look at the charges, breach of trust, fraud, and bribery. I think a prosecutor has to decide that he's got a reasonable chance of conviction. That would, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but you know, we can all read what took place. It doesn't seem to me that there's a very strong case against Wright. Now, Duffy might be something
So that being said, there's that whether or not it ever gets to charges for Wright, and if it gets to charges, will it ever get to a conviction? But I do think that what is laid out in those documents is still something for the Prime Minister to hang his hat on. So, you know, it would take a brave Conservative MP at this point to try and unseat him. He still is claiming he knew nothing. The question of ministerial responsibility, when has that happened in 7 years in this government?
But when has it ever happened in 40 or 50 years in any Canadian government? We've been hearing about ministerial responsibility and they never followed through. But look, I don't want to suggest it's irrelevant whether the Prime Minister knew or not, because of course it's not irrelevant. But it's almost irrelevant in the sense that this has become much larger than only whether the Prime Minister knew or not. It is the RCMP court documents have exposed a government which is basically a wasteland ethically. And that's what's so damaging
The Prime Minister's lawyer, Benjamin Perrin, is quoted in the documents as saying, well, Duffy's lawyer wants this to go down in writing. And you can almost hear him chuckling. Well, we're not selling
cars
and we're not settling a lawsuit. So eventually I persuaded her against it. They knew they were doing something which was ethically dubious. The fact that they did it on government email, I think, has shocked many people inside who are, you know, are used to not using email because it's traceable.
But it also details the level of control that this Prime Minister's office has over almost everything that this government does. The way they whipsawed the Senate to sanitize reports, the way these young people worked in his office actually ordered people around.
Right, but so I thought what was really funny about that was how frustrated Nigel Wright got, because they weren't always following into line. He expected them to. He wanted them to. But the senators and even events, especially with Deloitte, things happened well beyond his control. And his frustration you can see rising throughout these documents with
his
ability.
And, you know, we have to take a hat off to Christopher Montgomery, the lone hero in this thing. He worked for Senator Marjorie LeBreton. He said he's the only one that we know that objected who said, you can't do this. This is wrong. Yeah. And then you watch the emails, what happened. I mean, they came down on him like a ton of bricks.
Okay, so yes, he acted to protect the independence of the Senate as he viewed it. I would just also say, and you know, I sort of feel the need to play devil's advocate in a way on this, because the stuff that they lay out about Nigel Wright, Duffy is the one who's insisting through his lawyer that you halt the Deloitte audit at the suggestion of Senator Tkachuk first. Mm-hmm. And then it's Nigel Wright who says, you know, we're not going to prevent the RCMP from coming in. If there's fraud here, they're coming in. We're not going to do as you ask to, you know, screen you off from RCMP scrutiny, but I don't think there's a problem with this.
I think the other
So there is that. At no point did he say, we're going to shield you. So.
And I think the other thing is we keep mentioning...
Well, wait a minute here. They did shield him because the way it was structured, Duffy takes out a loan, then Nigel Wright sends a check to his lawyer, all designed to deceive.
We keep mentioning Watergate. I think we should also point out the fact that the whole thing started from pretty good intentions, which was to pay back taxpayers' money. Mm-hmm. It wasn't to promote the...
What amazes me is why would anybody of the level of Nigel Wright have gotten into an agreement with Mike Duffy?
Why on earth did they feel the need at any point to cover his expenses? Why did the Conservative Party agree to step up for $30,000 and opt out for $90,000? Why did Nigel opt in for $90,000? Well, why didn't they all say, Duffy, take your lumps?
Because he was like an ATM for them.
But you know,
he churned out cash for the Conservative Party. That's the short answer.
But by this point, it had been in the media for a couple months. Duffy was being hounded by reporters. He was no longer the cash cow, and yet they still wanted to do what they could. Why? That is the $90,000 question. Why on earth they didn't just say, Mr. Duffy, you've got a problem with your expenses. You go solve it, and if you don't solve it, you're out of the Conservative caucus. They should have. I'm sure Nigel Wright is saying that to himself right now. Why didn't he say that in February?
I almost feel like we're having a conversation about the Liberal Party many years ago. I remember sitting late one night with a Liberal cabinet minister gazing out at the Parliament buildings, who said to me, this operation, he said, quote unquote, has become essentially morally bankrupt. And now I think that along came Stephen Harper, and we really did expect more of him and more of the government he would lead. And he let us down, and I think that's what's really upset.
I think there's a lot of that, Craig, and I think I agree entirely, and I think that a lot of the Conservatives I talk to are very disillusioned with the way that this government has gone, that it's gone, that they now do things that they're ashamed of and that they don't really want to do. You know, even in committees now, the questions are written by people in the PMO. Everything is so tightly controlled. None of them are meant to talk to the media.
John, it was ever thus with this government. Right from the start, they were writing the questions for the... I mean, this is not new.
Speaking of the Liberals, Senator Colin Kenny, facing a sexual harassment complaint from a woman who worked in his office. Craig, you know Senator Kenny. What do you make of those?
We've heard these complaints before. Some of them have been public. If it's true, I wish Colin would come forward and say, I made a mistake, and try to put it behind him. At the moment, he is saying these complaints are without merit. And if he wants to dig in and fight it...
Here's the problem we have with this, too, and this happens far too often on Parliament Hill. When a woman complains against a man, as she did to the Liberal leader's office, it was lost. It wasn't until she more or less went public that they actually dealt with this issue and had Kenny leave. I think it is a larger issue that goes on far too often on Parliament Hill.
Maybe anywhere.
Yeah. What do you think?
Do I have to touch that? I don't know. I don't know how often it goes on Parliament Hill. I do know that there is a strange... interplay between power, political power, and sexual politics, and I don't know anything more about it than that.
All right, we'll move on to the by-elections now. Craig, what do you think the impact will be if the Conservatives lose that Brandon Souris riding? Because a lot of people say we're probably reading into more than it really means.
No, we're not. It would be a new foothold in the West for whoever wins, presumably the Liberal Party, and it would be the equivalent of the Liberal Party losing Outremont and Quebec, which they had held forever. Well, I talked to the editor of the Brandon Sun on Friday, and he said the Liberals have an edge. The night before, they'd had an all-candidates meeting. The Conservative had a bad time. This is a Conservative candidate who lost the riding once before, and I think there's a very good chance the Liberals will win it.
I think it's an important thing, but I don't think it is. It says anything necessarily about what's going to happen politically going forward. The Liberals have held this riding once for a few years, not that long ago. And anything can happen, A, in a by-election, and B, anything can happen before the next election. So, sure, I think the Liberals will be very happy if they win it. Of course they will be. But I don't think it suggests that there's the big red wave is going to sweep across the world.
I would just note that the Prime Minister is clearly worried about it, because on Friday when he went through Manitoba to open a new expressway, he campaigned from the podium for his candidate.
Nothing says a by-election like a ribbon cutting on an expressway.
Oh, okay, well, that's great. Fascinating conversation as always. Thanks so much. We'll be right back. Things to watch for this week: the results of tomorrow's four by-elections, and on Tuesday, the Auditor General will release his annual fall report. For breaking news during the week, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and check out our new blog on the Question Period website for the latest happenings on the Hill. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.